Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Welcome back to The Daily Show. My guest tonight is a Grammy Award-winning rapper whose latest album is called Michael. Please welcome Killer Mike. Congrats first
on
sweeping all of the major rap categories at the Grammys. Now, I'm sure you can't talk about what else happened there.
No,
but
I did sweep them like a new broom in your grandma's living room.
That's what it's there for. Grandma has it out to sweep up all those Grammys.
Shouts out to Betty, man. Rest in peace to my girl. Man.
Well, I have to ask the big question, though.
Yeah.
The big question everybody had after the Grammys. Did Taylor snub Celine?
Shouts out to Taylor, man. She wanted the Grammys. Her boyfriend won the Chiefs. If she's in the poly, me and my wife need a third. We're trying to win again.
Is that what power gives you right now? You feel like you could throw off polygamy now?
I feel like I could pull it off. Only problem is my wife's good with a gun. She doesn't agree. But I'll keep trying for all the men out there.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I was going to say, you seem like whatever you throw out there is going to come back to you.
I'll give it a shot.
You might as well ask, right? I mean, you are on quite the streak. I mean, as well as winning the Grammys, your son, after a three-year search for a kidney, just got a kidney.
My pony boy got a kidney. I had a talk with him about his kidney like you do a puppy. Like, this is your kidney. You're going to take care of it. Marijuana? Alcohol? No. You know what I mean? But his nurses, we were sitting there as the nurses were telling us, and I was like, God damn, this is a lot for a 21-year-old kid to be taking on. But my kid's a warrior, man. I just got to tell him he's my hero.
That's what it is. I mean, frankly, it is legitimately wonderful to hear good news happening to a good person.
Thank you so much.
What genie lamp did you rub? What is the what do you owe your success to?
Man, I owe it to the fact that I was just too stubborn to give up. My manager, Will, from Active Management, Will Bronson, and my A&R, because, like, we're all friends, but we have just saying, just get up every day, put one foot in front of the other. So I have a lot of talent, but it took me 20 years to get here, and I was just too stubborn to quit. And I think that that's half the battle, just being tenacious about it. Mm-hmm. And I want to take time to honestly thank my children, because my children have lost so much time with their dad as I was doing it. We've had great quality time, but the quantity of time has been cut short. So Malik, Anaya, Pony Boy, Mikey, just thank you guys so much for allowing Dad to do this. You know,
I love it. I mean, you've been at this for a long time, and you famously said, like, don't give up.
Don't give up.
You're never too old.
You're never too old.
I'm 45.
Well.
Could I win a best rap album? Could that happen?
As long as you got a hairline, and you do. And there we
Thank
go.
You.
That's happening.
It's creeping. It's creeping.
It looks great, though. You're on it. Maybe we're too old for porn, but rap we got. Rap, we're sent. We're sent for rap.
There was never an age where it would have been an appropriate choice in my life.
At 18 years old, listening to Luke and the Two Live Crew, we could throw that dick.
That was the era. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about your album.
Yes.
A personal album, but I want to also look at, like, you reference Satan a lot on this album. Even on the cover right here, you have devil horns.
Horns and halos.
Horns and halo, right? Yeah. Spirituality is a big part of this album.
Yeah.
We're in an interesting time right now.
Yeah.
People seem to be moving away from spirituality.
Yeah.
And yet it feels like you infuse a lot of your work into it. I know you have a lot of respect for the craft of hip-hop, of rap.
I do.
Do you feel like that can serve as a conduit for people who are looking for spirituality, who are looking for something? What do you see that role?
I came out with a rap album called Rap Music 12 years ago, and it was, you know, it was titled Rebellious African at Me, Be Me, and then People's Music for all the people. And at that time, I realized that the only religious experiences I'd really had were when I listened to or was a part of music. Mm-hmm. And music is a very big part of the church. I'm a Southern Black man. I grew up in Baptist and Pentecostal churches. So music was a conduit to put everybody in the room on the same frequency and the same energy. So I actually believe that people aren't away from spirituality as much as they're running from the institutions that promise them spirituality and just deliver things like give us money or we need tithing. I think that people are trying to find... I think that they're trying to find God and spirituality, but they're finding it in places you wouldn't regularly find it. They're finding communing with one another. They're finding it away from church and out in nature. And not that nature becomes their God as much as it's a lot easier to talk to God when you're standing under a tree smoking a joint, you know?
He's closer that way, right?
Yeah, I won't talk about my thing, but I was sitting in a jail cell and I didn't have anything to do, so I just prayed. And I just thank God for 3 hours. I say, you know, just thank you for the blessings I've been bestowed upon me. Thank you for the life you've given me. I invoked the spirit of my mother and my grandmother and was like, I hope you guys see me. Not the jail part, but the winning part. And after I got out the next morning, I got a call to my son and got a kidney. So I'm very much a believer. I have a white manager. Will's a white guy. And he said, shit, for 15 years, I thought you were an atheist. I was like, no, Will, I was more agnostic. But making this album brought me closer to God. It brought me closer to the grand being that has designed human beings to be here. So I'm thankful that music brings me closer to my creator.
Well said. Well said. I mean, it's interesting you talk about it like that, because I do think I spend a lot of time out in the world.
Yeah.
I go to a lot of rallies, talk to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very easy to otherize. Mm-hmm. The MAGA crew, the Trump crew, whatever side you're in, I think we're on a search for something that makes us feel whole, makes us feel part of a community, and gives us a sense of meaning. And I think without that in our lives, we replace it with the quickest, easiest, loudest thing. And so finding a conduit for potential good, I think, is remarkable and to be commended. So kudos on that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Tell me this. I'm also a big fan of Run the Jewels.
Yes,
love Run the Jewels.
Listen, man, I felt like Run the Jewels got snubbed a few years ago, and one of the best parts about being one half of, to me, the greatest rap group going today is the fact that this album, Michael, also brought LP his first Grammy.
Yes.
So shouts out and congratulations to my partner, Rhyme LP.
Give it up to LP. I'm curious. What is fun as a fan of yours and a fan of LPs, you hear your influences and in what you do on solo projects and what you bring to a Run the Jewels project. Yeah. I think when you are marinating on Michael and sitting down thinking about what is a Run the Jewels project and what is a Killer Mike project, how do you delineate that?
Well, it's all the same. Not that it's the same sound or same thing, but so imagine Run the Jewels, the Uncanny X-Men. And then if you're a reader of Kyle, I'm about to nerd out on you guys.
If you can work polygamy into this, I'm going to be so impressed.
Well, man. Oh, boy. Who wouldn't want to marry Storm?
Yeah. Okay, there we go.
So Run the Jewels is the Uncanny X-Men. It's a lot of characters come in and out. Rest in peace to Gangsta Boo, Zach De La Roca, you know, Mavis Staples, Josh Homme. All these people have come in. And what we have there is a university where you can find anybody, right? Mm-hmm. And Michael is just a prequel story to one half of the group Run the Jewels. So Michael is an extension of the Run the Jewels world, and you get to see the reason why I rap about my mother and Run the Jewels. You get to hear the whole story on Michael. So imagine Logan to Wolverine, and that's what this is. So this is an extension of Run the Jewels.
I want to switch gears a little bit. I will say I rewatched it recently after the George Floyd murder. You made an impromptu press conference in Atlanta. You were asked to make a press conference, which I think is, if you haven't seen it, I think is not only the clarity of it, the catharsis within it, and the call to action, I think, is a pretty remarkable moment over the last decade.
Thank you.
Something you said there resonated with so many people. Yeah. You asked people at a time of unrest.
Yeah.
You said to focus on, to plot,
plan
strategize, optimize,
organize, and mobilize. Absolutely.
We're on that process right now.
Yes.
I know you were talking specifically about police brutality.
Yes.
Here we are 3.5 years later.
Yeah.
Where are we on that? How are you seeing that process unfold?
Well, I'll tell you this. What I was saying that night, because there's a lot of misconstruing, and just flat, I mean, be honest, people be lying.
They do.
Right? So
yeah.
People
trust
have
me,
agendas.
Trust me. I know.
You know, some people are like, you were defending the cops and crying. I'm like, no, it's not what I was doing. I was actually smoking blunts with Noriega, eating fish sandwiches, trying not to go.
And that's Noriega the rapper.
Yeah, Noriega
the rapper.
Yeah. Shouts out to Nori. And my friend T.I. said, hey, the mayor called me. There's some unrest. I was like, she never called me. And he was like an hour after asking for about an hour. He says, well, if you're not going to go, I'm not going to go. And everybody knows the rap rules. You can't leave your homies down. So I went with him. And I'm pulling up to the jail with a quarter pound of marijuana, a little stoned.
A quarter pound?
I had just scored. And I
How long does that last?
About a couple weeks, maybe.
Okay.
So I'm there, and I'm just like, okay. And I see our mayor, who's also from me and T.I.'s neighborhood, and she's doing a dynamic job of telling the police, hold off. Don't make a move. We're going to talk to the public first. And then Tip gets up to speak, and I'm just like, okay, I stood in solidarity with my homie. And then he's like, and now Killer Mike. And I'm like, oh, shit. And I just simply told the truth. And the truth is, what happened to George Floyd was a murder. It was evil. It was wrong. The truth is also that Atlanta has long been a fortress for the black civil rights movement in this country and civil rights period. And if we would have burned Atlanta down, we'd have burned down a fortress that people could use to plot, plan, strategize, organize, and mobilize. So ultimately, all I was saying in that speech was use your homes, use your businesses, use your churches as centers to welcome people in and plan, plot out what are we going to do next. Strategize, organize, and mobilize, and then do the next thing. I challenged them, and my city stepped up. What I'm seeing in Atlanta now is organizers be supported. I'm seeing more organizers come out. My man Rowett down there just gave an amazing speech yesterday. Shouts out to him. He's an Indian-American guy. He's in Atlanta. He's organizing constantly. We're organizing around the vote. I saw Atlantans really welcome other people in to try to push back against the powers that be. That's what my city's always done. That's what we're doing now, and that's what I think we'll do going forward. Organizers do not have to agree with each other. We do not have to agree with methodology. But what we must start to agree with is that there's a problem to be solved. And if we waste too much time infighting, the problems never get solved. And the oligarchs and corporations continue to run this country.
Killer Mike, everyone.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Jump into the epic world of Avatar: The Last Airbender.
With Nickelodeon's official companion podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements.
Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements on Apple Podcasts.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Daily Show. My guest tonight is a director and Emmy-winning writer whose film American Fiction is currently nominated for 5 Academy Awards. Please welcome Cord Jefferson. Cord.
Wow. Thank you.
Wow. Feature film debut, and you get 5 Academy Award nominations.
Yeah.
I'm curious how you're feeling about it and how you're wielding that strength now.
I'm not wielding it too much, unfortunately. I probably should be more demanding, yeah, but I'm not. I feel a little overwhelmed, you know. It is. We made this movie with very little money and very little time. We didn't make it under these great auspices, and so to be here right now, sitting with you, is beyond my wildest dreams.
This must be your highlight,
yeah,
right,
man,
now.
This
right?
is crazy. You know, truly. I don't really get nervous in interviews anymore, but I'm pretty nervous here right now. Daily Show's a big deal.
You have nothing to be nervous about, all right? All right, so I want to talk Palestine.
Okay. That's great. Everybody get out your phones.
There you go.
Start putting this on the internet. I'm happy to do it. Like, my publicist is going to love this.
They're like, let's get into this. Well, I mean, this movie, it causes a ton of conversations. Mm-hmm. It feels very of the now. And when I watch this, I think what I was surprised to find out that it's based on a book from 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? But it's still so relevant today. What did you see in that story that made you want to tell this story now?
Oh, my God, man. So 3 months before I found this novel, Erasure by Percival Everett, that I adapted, I sent in a script to some executives, and they sent me back a note that a character in it, a black character, needed to be blacker. And I said, I said, I will indulge this note if whoever gave it is willing to sit down with me and tell me what it means to be blacker. Tell me how to make somebody blacker. And of course, that note went away because they probably knew they were setting themselves up for like a huge civil rights lawsuit, and so they dropped it. And you know, but that was just one of the many instances in my TV and film writing career where it's like people just have this very limited perspective of what it means to be a black writer. They have a very limited perspective of what black stories look like, what black life looks like. And so when I read this book that was published in 2001, but it felt like it was written yesterday. I was so overcome with sort of this idea that it felt like it was written specifically for me. I just understood the characters so well.
Yeah, I think one of the targets of this film is white liberal audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And first off, how dare you? Do you get exhausted talking to white liberals about this movie and having to explain race to them over and over again? To be like, what is the deal with race in America?
No, actually. I mean, maybe a little bit, but I've set myself up for this. This is the work that I put into the world, so I'm happy to chat about it. Yeah.
I mean, I think what's interesting about this movie too is that it's not only it's a satire, it's a political satire, but it's also really heartfelt. Mm-hmm. I was surprised by that. It really follows a family.
Yeah.
It follows the struggles that they have. Why was that important for you to tell and to marry with it? It seems like those don't always go together when you see satirical films.
Yeah, and that's I wanted the movie to be satirical, but never farcical.
Mm-hmm.
And so sort of the clip that you played right there, I think is one of the grounding moments of the film. I didn't want it to feel like it was so funny or got so silly that it became slapsticky. Right. I always wanted it to feel, because I feel like when satire gets kind of slapsticky, it lets people off the hook. It sort of like says like this entire thing's a joke that you can laugh at. You don't need to take it seriously. And I think that this movie sort of makes some people uncomfortable sometimes, and I'm okay with that. I think that every time I'm experiencing a piece of art and it makes me uncomfortable, I kind of lean in because I think that sort of wisdom is on the other side of that discomfort.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about the ending. I don't want to give it away, but this movie ends and you sort of, there's a meta ending. And I wonder if that comes out of network notes wanting you to end this movie for a certain audience, if that comes out with you either not knowing how you wanted to end it or wanting to end it in a way that leaves people with their own ways in which they can end the story? Like, how did you approach wrapping this thing up?
Yeah, so the novel that I adapted is very metatextual. It's sort of, and the epilogue of the novel is this Latin phrase that translates to, I offer no hypothesis. And so to me, that meant that it was
great
important.
Hollywood ending. Great.
Just a Latin phrase used with mathematics. People love that.
Gotcha, baby. Yeah, I love that ending and the ending to Seven,
huge
my two
Hollywood,
favorite endings.
Hollywood ending.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want the ending to be didactic. I wanted the ending to feel audacious. And so I was trying to figure out what the ending was going to be, and one of the producers called me and said, the movie's a big swing. Try to write an ending that feels like a big swing, too, because I was kind of stuck as to what the ending would be. And so I wrote an ending that feels as audacious as the rest of the movie. I think that I didn't want to spoon-feed people lessons. Like it said, I offer no hypothesis. I'm giving you some scenarios and some characters. It sort of offers you an opportunity to think for yourself and decide how you want to think about things.
I mean, I do think this movie also asks a lot of questions about what Hollywood wants in movies from black filmmakers and what a white audience will respond to.
Yeah.
And you make this film.
Yeah.
And then a primarily white Oscar public is like, we love this film. And I wonder how you, is that a sweet revenge? Is that an extension of the meta story that you're telling? It feels like there's a conversation about people enjoying your film that's already happening within your film.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it is, you, I'm basically slowly cosplaying as Jeffrey Wright. I'm looking at myself right now, and I'm becoming Jeffrey Wright.
Yeah, do you
in
normally
the
wear these glasses? Those are Jeffrey
yes,
Wright glasses.
I know. This is a Jeffrey Wright suit. I'm going gray like Jeffrey Wright. So it's getting more and more meta. I'll tell you how meta it's gotten. The other day, Percival Everett, the author of the novel Erasure, was stopped in a coffee shop in L.A. This is a true story. And somebody asked him if he was Jeffrey Wright. And he said, no, I'm not Jeffrey Wright, but I wrote the book that Jeffrey Wright is now in the movie based on. So it is all, you know, I like to maybe think that maybe this will all be, maybe after the Oscars I'll reveal that I'm a white guy. And nobody will know. You guys don't know.
I tell you what.
Maybe I've been in blackface this whole time and it's just a big trick.
God damn, I love it. That would supersede the ending of 7 for me. So I would appreciate it if you did that.
I'm just Tobey Maguire. People don't know that. I'm Tobey Maguire.
You were Tobey Maguire this
whole time. Court Jefferson's not real.
American Fiction is now playing in theaters everywhere. Court Jefferson.
Explore more shows from the Daily Show podcast universe by searching The Daily Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central, and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
Become a part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry with an education from Trinity School of Natural Health. Trinity graduates can empower their communities through natural health principles and techniques, whether they go into practice to guide others toward their wellness goals or open a store to sell their favorite health products. Trinity grads are equipped to change lives. With 19 online programs and flexibility to fit your busy schedule, including the popular Certified Natural Health Professional, you can get the training that helps you turn your passion into a career. And here's the best part. You can earn the certification in less than a year. From herbology to naturopathy and health coaching, Trinity allows you to make a meaningful difference by helping others live healthier, happier lives. Don't wait any longer to pursue your passion for natural health. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.